talk, and I'm going to have it as an MP3 file on our website, and we'll also give it to FEI if they want to post it. The microphone picks me up, but it doesn't pick you up. What I'd like you to do is find a coin. And if you don't have a coin, see if you can borrow some a coin. Make sure it's got a hand and a tail. Everybody should have a coin. Okay. Everybody got a coin? All right. So this is a group of finance people. So this should be easy. If I take the coin and I flip it, what's the odds of it landing heads? Very good. Now, suppose I flip it twice. What's the odds of it landing heads twice? Still? No, twice in a row, heads. What's the odds?
25.
Okay, now it's going to get harder. Suppose I do three times. What's the odds of it being heads three times in a row?
12%
or 5? Who?
That's 1 divided by 125.
What's the answer? 12?
No.
12 and a half.
All right, that's 3. How about 4 times?
6 and a quarter.
Hmm?
6 and a quarter.
6, about 6.
6 to 5.
Okay. 6%. See, the numbers are going to get real low real fast, right?
Right.
So it's pretty statistically difficult to do 7 in a row. Right? Would you agree that's a very small number? It's almost a black swan. A black swan is the name of a book that came out that I love. It was written by a University of Massachusetts at Amherst professor who also turned out to be an investment broker. And black swan is a term that was used in England in the 19th century to indicate something that has such a low probability of happening, don't even bother dealing with it. So, you know, we all know swans are white. In theory, there could be black swans, but as a practical matter, don't worry your little head about it. So that's what the term black swan means. Forget about it. So let's try that out. Everybody stand up, please. Take your coin. I'm going to ask you to flip it. Everybody who has heads, remain standing, and if it's tails, sit down. Flip it once. If it's heads, remain standing. If it's tails, sit down. All right, those of you who are remaining, flip it again. Same thing. If it's heads, stand up. Tails, sit down. All right, flip it 3 times. Flip it again. If it's heads, So we have one more? One. Oh, we have 2. Okay. Flip it again.
It's a special coin,
all heads. Heads.
I don't have
eggs. So, flip it again.
This guy in the craps table will make a lot of
tails.
Okay. So we had four in a row. I've done this with 30 people, and I've had as many as 8 in a row. We'll come back to what this means and the implications. Let's talk about the local market. I want to talk my personal observation, and then I want to talk about some things that I'm seeing, and then leave it up to let's open it up to for everybody. We've been in business for 31 years. We started off as a senior executive outplacement firm, and then we sort of morphed into a theme of leadership change when the stakes are high. Essentially, we wanted to have the flexibility to get involved in all stages of transitions of senior people. So we do retain search, we do coaching, and we do outplacement. For some companies, that seems kind of bizarre. And other companies, they say, absolutely, it's all about the same thing. Leadership change. So that's what we've been doing. Because we're in the employment business, I thought we were a lagging indicator in the economy. So in 2000 and probably around November, December 2007, our business started changing. Search was stopping, coaching was stopping, it was all outplacement. By 2008, it was all outplacement. I was not connecting the dots because I was looking at the stock market, and the stock market was just, it wasn't going up, it was kind of like this. And obviously in 2009, the only thing we've been doing is outplacement. Sometime around, I'd say November to 2009, we started getting calls about coaching and about search. And today, we have no proposals out for outplacement. It's only retained search. It's only coaching. My anecdotal experience is the market is still crappy. The market is still tough. Companies are beginning to start planning for the future. Somebody, I think it was you, said the green shoots. I don't see any roses, but I'm beginning to see green shoots. Certainly no yay signs. So that's anecdotally. One of the things that we do with our clients to help them figure out what's coming next is we monitor a stock called Manpower, which is a New York Stock Exchange company. It's the world's largest temporary agency, interim and employment agency. And I put the Manpower stock in front of you, and I've superimposed the S&P 500 on top of it. Interim work tends to be the first to go, and when the economy begins to come back, companies will begin to hire interim and consulting people first before they hire full-time people. So I would suspect that just as Scott and Peabody turned out to be a leading indicator in the economy, I believe Manpower is a leading indicator in the economy. So if you look at at this chart, if you look at May 2008, Manpower stock started plummeting much further than the S&P 500 index. And then we get to September 08, and we all remember what happened in September 08. So you see, now it's really starting to plummet, but Manpower is plummeting even more. And then it's kind of rocking on the bottom, and it's under the S&P 500. Now go to August 09. Remember, I said we started seeing a change in November. Manpower started seeing a change in August. It starts moving up ahead of the S&P 500 and has essentially remained there. So again, to me, that's another indication that things are moving in the right direction. Third indication that things are moving in the right direction, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announced last week that the unemployment has held steady at 9.7. All in all, that's a good sign that it just held steady. But the important thing is that for 4 months in a row, temporary employment has been booming. Roy Krause, who is the president of Asterion, he expects 100,000 new temporary jobs to be filled every month. So again, as the temporary market begins, the full-time market will follow. So I don't see a robust job picture yet, but I see a better situation than we've had in probably a year to maybe a year and a half. What are you seeing out there? Is that consistent with what you're seeing?
Exactly. I started getting a lot more activity around Thanksgiving.
Okay, same thing. Okay. Anybody seeing something different? Okay. VCs. Larry? Are VCs starting to get more active, or is it the same?
I think has capital, who doesn't? So I think it's an exceptional shakeup to DC.
Okay.
Staying around to begin with the one that drew capital. Steady investment and opportunity.
Okay. All right. Anybody else want to make a comment? Okay. Let's move to the second piece, which is the a look at the CGQ, corporate governance quotients. If you would take a look at Yahoo Finance for Brookline Bank Corp. Anybody here from Brookline Bank Corp? Any investors in Brookline Bank Corp? Oh, good. if anybody would like a copy of what I'm about to say, there's a speech that I gave at State Street and Bentley College about a year and a half ago. I have it. Just give me your business card and I'll give you a copy of the speech. So here's the speech. CGQ stands for Corporate Governance Quotient. It's a service of the ISS, Institutional Shareholder Services. If you are having dinner with the CEO of a public company and you feel like elevating that person's blood pressure, just say, what do you think of CGQ? And watch his face turn red and he'll start sputtering. He will say, CGQ is totally arbitrary. He will say, CGQ has nothing to do with quality of governance. And he will also say that it is a legal shakedown, because what ISS does is that they provide the data, then they turn around and say, if you don't like it, we can, for a very hefty fee, we'll help you improve it. It's also not transparent about how they figure out what they do. So CEOs are very angry about ISS. There are three versions of ISS, and I don't think people are grasped that we are now on version 3, and I think intellectually they think they're on version 1. So I want you to understand what version 3 means, how to access version 3, and what does it mean for you in managing your careers. Version 1 of the CGQ was a bunch of good governance geeks getting together around a table deciding what are important factors. In that sense, the CEOs are correct. It was kind of arbitrary based on a kind of biased view of what governance should be like. Version 2 came out after Sarbanes-Oxley, maybe in 2002, where some of the things that were in version 1 were now part of Sarbanes-Oxley, which was required. So they took out the required part that was in Sarbanes-Oxley. And what you had left in version 2 was a stripped-down version of version 1. But essentially the same thing. Now, how was CGQ distributed? It's sold as a subscription service to institutions for two purposes. For investors, it is a risk management tool. So a low CGQ score is usually going to be correlated with a high probability of shareholder lawsuits. So before you invest, you want to know, what's the probability that this company is going to have shareholder lawsuits? A low CGQ score is predictive of shareholder lawsuits. The second reason why it was sold to institutional shareholders was to guide institutional shareholders on voting of boards of directors at the annual meeting. Should you vote for them, yes or no? ISS would make a recommendation for its subscribers and base the recommendation on the CGQ score. So the only way you can look at a CGQ score is if you were an institution and you were subscribing to it. Now we have version 3, which is what we're dealing with today. It began in 2006, completely different from version 1. Version 3 is statistically driven. It was based on research that was conducted by a professor of accounting at University of Georgia named Brown. And he statistically looked at the correlations. Larry Brown of Georgia State University performed 4,000 statistical tests to see the correlation between 77 corporate governance factors and then 16 measures of corporate performance like PE ratio, beta, return on investment, return on equity, et cetera, et cetera. So version 3 is not about a bunch of good governance guys sitting around a table. Version 3 is statistically driven. Second thing about version 3 is anybody with access to the internet can see a CGQ score. All you need to do is Google Yahoo space finance space profile space name of company or stock symbol. So I went to Google, I typed Yahoo space finance space profile space Brookline Bancorp. And this is what I get. On the lower right-hand side of my screen, do you see this corporate governance? This is the CGQ score. You'll see on the left side that Brookline Bank Corp is a S&P 600 company, small cap. And the right side, it says, as of the 1st of March, the score is better than 9.9% of S&P 600 companies. Now that is ISS speak for saying 90% of S&P 600 companies that we have measured did better than they did. That's low. Now, what does that mean? According to Dr. Brown's research, firms in the bottom decile of the industry, which is this company here, have a five-year return on investment that is 5% below industry average, whereas firms in the top decile of the industry, the top 10 percentile, would have five-year returns that are 19% above the average. You see the difference? Version 2 was a risk management tool. Low scores are indicative of a shareholder class action lawsuit potential. This version is low scores are indicative of that, but high scores are indicative of something positive. Version 2 was you had to be a subscriber. Version 3 is you have to know how to get onto Yahoo. So the audience is much broader. It's a different tool. Has different implications. Any questions about this? Now again, I mean, I'll give you really just really a couple of examples. We all know in September 2008 the stock market just collapsed. You may recall that Bear Stearns was $120 a share. At the beginning of October, I'm saying, you know, I don't think this is the end of the world. I think this is simply a recession. I think it's going to come back. And when it does come back, I think there will still be investment banks. So now that everybody's running away from investment banks, I think I'm going to invest. So what am I going to invest in? So my analysis is down to Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns. I really don't know that much about investment banks, except I know that these are both established firms and they've been around for a long time. But what I see is that the CGQ score on Bear Stearns is at the bottom 25th percentile, and the CGQ score for Goldman Sachs is at the top 75th percentile. So with that information alone, I said, okay, that CGQ score tells me there's something fundamentally wrong at Bear Stearns. And there's something fundamentally right at Goldman Sachs. So I'll invest in Goldman Sachs. I don't know if, time will tell if Goldman Sachs was a good decision, but I know not investing in Bear Stearns was a good decision. And I based it on CGQ. Let's take a look at this. We have Brookline Bancorp. The according to the Boston Business Journal last week, so this would have been about 5 days after the CGQ score came out, the chairman of the board resigned from the company. Apparently, Brooklyn Bancorp was approached about being acquired. And the chairman says the decision to reject the offer was reached by taking an enormous compilation of information and analysis assembled by our investment bankers and by our own staff that strongly supported the offer. The CEO Perrault's strategic vision is at 50,000 feet. His vision is unsupported, speculative, self-serving. And that was his public statement. Is anybody in there all good class action shareholder law lawyer? My point is that this piece of data would have predicted class action shareholder lawsuit. It'll probably happen. So again, you can use the CGQ score as a canary in the gold mine to kind of tell you where are the companies you want to shy away from and where are the companies you want to get involved in. Most companies these days are going to be in the middle of the pack, kind of in the 50th percentile. For example, General Electric is about 45%. Something in the middle of the pack is you can't make any decision. You're looking at the extremes. That tells you a story. Any questions? Any reactions? How many of you have used CGQ? Okay. Again, if any of you would like a copy of the speech, just give me a card or scribble something and write CGQ, and I'll be glad to send it to you. Any reactions before we go on?
It makes good sense.
Yeah, it's a piece of data, and it's free. So why wouldn't you use it? All right, let's yeah, sure.
What is the basis upon which the CGQ profile is calculated? If I'm a CEO, I'd like to know what the rules are.
Yes, the factors are published by ISS. We have them on our website, Board Options. You can take a look at them as well. But you can go to the ISS website. It'll be there. The factors are there. I mean, I'll give you an anecdotal example. I had a meeting at the new Marriott Hotel, and it's a guy that I knew. He was the CEO, and now he was on the board, and now he was chairman of the audit committee of a public technology company. And he's asking me, would I be able to do a board search and a CFO search? And of course, I'm saying, yes, of course I can. I'd be delighted to do that. And then I go home and I go to Yahoo Profile Finance, and I find this company's in the bottom fifth percentile. Remember I said, if it's in the 10th percentile, that's significant. This was in the fifth percentile. And I call him back and I say, look, I'll be glad to do the search. My problem is, any CFO that I would be recruiting and any board member that I would be recruiting should be able to go to Yahoo and figure this out. I need a compelling reason. I need a compelling story to tell them why you're so bad and what you're planning to do about it. Oh, I can understand, you know, well, why they're doing it because the CEO also is on the audit committee. But, oh. But you see, we're a German company, and that's why. I said, no. That's bad. That would give you a low score. But this is trash. This is trash score. There's something more here. And so he said, let me get back to you. So he doesn't get back to me for 3 months. And then I call him, and he said, you know, Larry, you alerted me that there was a problem here. It turned out the more I investigated, the worse it got. And the more there were bad things going on. You know, I'm sorry, not only is there no search, I've quit. So again, CGQ can be a useful tool. We did a coin exercise. And I'm sorry, we got somebody who got, was it five? Four or five? We've had seven. My purpose was, it is practically possible to score very high. You know, when we hear the odds of winning the lottery is like a million to one. Yeah, that is true. But somebody's going to win it. That doesn't mean it's impossible. It means it's a million to one. It means it's a black swan. Do black swans happen? Well, isn't that what Darwin is all about? Isn't the survival? Isn't the change? How species change? The story of black swans, highly improbable events occur. What we're trying to teach our job candidates in our executive outplacement is to begin looking at your careers, not just your job search, but your careers, in terms of three dimensions, and to manage in terms of three dimensions. And we even go so far as to say, you got to think of time in terms of three dimensions, and we live in three dimensions at the same time. It sounds very esoteric, except when you start looking at what we see in physics every day. The sort of Newtonian world that we see in everyday life that makes a lot of sense totally collapses once you get into subatomic particles and quantum physics. It operates in a different model, yet it operates at the same in a parallel way with the world that we see. It is possible the world is actually in different dimensions. We just see what we see. The first dimension that we see is the linear dimension, the straight ahead dimension. A plus B equals C. This is what we were taught in college, in high school. If you take these courses in these orders and get this grade, you will get this degree. When you get this degree, you can get that job. And then the next thing is this, and then the next thing is this, and the world is very linear and predictable. And as long as you stay on the path, you know what's going to happen next. And accountants are really good at this. Then we get into the nonlinear world. Another word for nonlinear is chaos. Chaos is not randomness. It means nonlinear. It obeys a law, but it is not a linear law. An example for me would be the famous Wayne Gretzky, who was once asked, "Why are you such a great hockey player?" He said, "Other players look at where the puck is. I skate to where the puck is going." Think about that. Think about that in terms of your job. If you are spending, let's say, 30% of your job search time responding to ads that you see on the internet, you're skating to where the puck is. And probably by the time you get to the puck, it's gone. It's gone for two reasons. The first is sheer numbers. You're skating the same puck everybody else is skating to, so statistically the odds are just against you. The second is when you see an ad on the internet and it has a date, let's say the date is March 9th, does that mean it's a fresh job? No. It just says March 9th. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a fresh job. I mean, I'll give you an example from our own practice, and I think we're very typical of search firms. We had a search for a CFO. I did the search exactly the way most search people do. I networked with my own contacts first. And I put together I interviewed the people I was referred to, and as a result of that, I put together a first group called a panel, and I present the candidates to the company. I presented five. They decided they want to interview four. Being a pessimistic guy, I say, what if all four people fail? I need to come up with a second panel. So what I do is now I put an ad in FEI and Fang and Monster and ExecuNet about this job. The date says it's the 9th of March. The reality is the job's almost filled. I'm just looking to cover my ass. You don't know that. Lots of times jobs are already filled by the time they're already put on. Sometimes companies will put ads on not because it's a real job, but because they're looking to obey affirmative action requirements, which say you can't discriminate. You really try to look for a variety of different people. And the reality is, you know, the boss's nephew's grandson already got the job. You're just looking to fill up a file cabinet full of paperwork. So responding to ads is like skating to where the puck is. Does that mean you shouldn't do it? No, but you should put some time limits on it. Because anytime you get onto the internet, you can sort of lose track of time. How many of you have ever turned on the computer, it's 9 o'clock, and then all of a sudden it's 5:30, and you say, where did that go? And you had no idea where the time went. How many of you have gone through that? You need to put some limits on it. I wear a digital watch. It has a countdown feature. What I do is my span of attention is about 45 minutes. Most senior executives that I work with, their span of attention is about 20 minutes. We've all worked for people whose span of attention is 20 seconds, but mine's 45 minutes. So what I do is when 45 minutes is up, I stop. I do something else. Work to time, or don't work to task. So we have the linear world and we have a non-linear world. Here's an example of non-linear world tonight. The setup is structured, right? You knew you were coming at a certain place at a certain time, but you had no idea who you're going to be meeting, and you can't predict what's going to result out of it. This meeting here tonight is classic non-linear. And I think I know for me, and I'm sure for many people in this room, I might have 100 uneventful, time-wasting evenings, and then have one meeting that changes my life. How many have ever had that? And that's what it's all about. That's the non-linear world. Now, every outplacement firm will say, networking is the way to go. Absolutely, it's the way to go. But is it the only way? Well, I said three dimensions. What's the third dimension? The third dimension is random. Totally random. What the exercise we did here today with the coin was totally random. I had no idea who was going to get five heads in a row. But how much of our lives are changed by randomness? A lot. And the question is, can you manage randomness? And the answer is, of course you can manage randomness. You can make randomness. For example, I'm just going to give you an example. When I have downtime, I take my BlackBerry out. And I put it on the address book, and I just randomly spin the dial and push the number where it comes. One day, I'm standing in line in Wellesley at a pizza joint, waiting to order lunch. And I randomly spin the dial, and my usual statement is, "Hi, I was thinking about you, wanting to give you a call." And the person on the other end says, "It is incredible that you should be calling me." because we need someone with your skills right now. That's happened about 3 times in my life. You know, anytime I've got downtime, I take out my BlackBerry and just randomly just call. I want to manipulate the random factor because it affects all of us. How many of you have ever had a life-changing event, could be positive, could be negative, and it was a totally random thing? The point here is, how deliberate are you going to be about managing your life? We want to live in the illusion that life is linear. We want to live in the illusion that life is linear. That all we have to do is follow the dots, and everything's going to be okay. Our mothers told us that to help us get to sleep. Doesn't work. Part of our lives is linear. Yes, of course. But the other part of it is non-linear. The other thing, once you begin to grasp this, it's a different way of looking at the world, because for many people that I know, and a lot of them are accountants and finance people, they look at non-random events as disturbances that are negative. Since life should be linear, the non-linear thing is called noise. Guess what? Noise also means opportunities. And then the final thing is the most disturbing of all, and that is randomness. Our lives get changed just for no reason at all, and we can manage randomness. Let me explain some other ways in which we work with job candidates to help them manage the three dimensions of their lives. First is to take a nonlinear event and to make it more linear. I'm talking specifically about networking. When you're meeting somebody, let's say at this meeting, somebody suggests, why don't you talk to Joe? And then you meet Joe after this meeting for a drink here at the Newton Marriott Hotel, and you begin talking with Joe. Question is Joe really focusing 8 cylinders of his brain on you? Or is he really focusing 1 to 2 cylinders on you and going through the motions? You know, most of the time when you're networking with people, that meeting is not as important to the other person as it is to you. And so you should assume they're on 1 cylinder. And you know when a networking meeting is a failure. How do you know? When Joe says to me, I can't think of anybody right now, let me get back to you. How many of you have ever had that? You know what that means, right? So why don't you take a non-linear event, networking, turn it more linear by coming up with a list of companies that you want to work with. We recommend that our job candidates put together what we call the Nifty 50 list, the top 50 companies that you'd love to work for. So then as we're talking, I can say, these are the companies where I think I could add the most value. Know anybody in these companies? Another thing that you could do, how many of you are on LinkedIn? Okay, so if I'm meeting Joe, I would also look at who's Joe's contacts. There may be people that Joe knows that I want to know, and I might then say, you know, I'd really like, Susan? I'd like to know Susan. I understand you know Susan. Would it be presumptuous? Now, Joe can always say, well, I know Susan's a contact of mine, but you know what? I really don't know her that well. And anybody who's on LinkedIn understands that. You know, just because we're first linked doesn't mean we're buddies. So that's okay. So this makes it more linear. Now, suppose Joe is on the board of directors of a company. I can go to Google, and then I can type investing space, Business Week, space, Joe Goodwin, or Joseph Goodwin. and I will get his name if he's on a public company, and then I will get a pictorial representation of everybody in his network who's on a public company board. So if I want to network at a board level, and he's on a board, I can go to Investing Space, Business Week, Space, name of person, and then see who do I want to get introduced to. This is a way of making more linearity. By the way, what's the most linear way that you can find a job? The most linear way that you can find a job is get in your car and drive. Show up. Woody Allen once said the secret of success is showing up. It is true that if I went up to Waltham and went to Raytheon, there is a guard at the door. I wouldn't even get to the receptionist. They are tough. It is true if I went to Ropes and Gray. There's a guard at the lobby, and I probably couldn't get through the elevator. But you know, most companies are in Class B office space. They're in suburbs. They have common lobbies. You can walk into the elevator, and you can go in, and you'll get stopped by the receptionist. And you can always say, I happen to live 15 miles away, and I think your company is going to be growing. And you might have a need for, the CEO might have a need for somebody with the skills that I have. Please take a look at this resume, and you could decide whether to forward it to the CEO or trash it. Turn a dragon at the gate into an ally. People are, you know, I don't know how many of you have hired receptionists, but when I hire a receptionist, I try to hire somebody who's nice with people and pretty smart, since that's the first point of contact with customers. So instead of treating that person like a no-brainer dragon at the gate, treat the person like an ally. And say, you know the company better than me. I'm 15 minutes away. Here's my resume. You could trash it, or you could forward it. You decide. Show up. That's linear. There's some institutions, higher education for one, healthcare is another. They're open systems. You can walk in anytime, anywhere. You can go into any elevator and go right up to the secretary, to the VP, or you can go up to the assistant to the president and present your resume. How many of you are doing that? Start doing it. Show up. Again, as everybody has said, every rule that we have used in outplacement for 31 years, we've had to throw out. Any book that is more than a year old is already outdated. All the concepts about how do you find the job, you got to look at them through fresh eyes. Why do we look at it through fresh eyes? Because nobody knows what they're doing. CEOs are not sure about what the future is. You're not sure what the future is. So the person who has the confidence will get the eyeballs. Any questions about that? And again, if you want a copy of this, it's a Harvard Business Review piece. Just send me a business card. Just put down 3D, and I'll send you that.
No solicitations, no solicitors. Do you ignore that?
Fine,
or?
Yeah, sure. Sure. I'm not trying to push anything. I'm saying you decide what to do. That's all. Again, there's no magic here. We are looking at, like the coin toss, it's a statistical exercise. It's what I call a black swan. It's a low probability event. But again, you can achieve success on low probabilities. Many entrepreneurs are successful because they achieve success with low probability events. By the way, one of the things I've observed is the whole issue about randomness. We don't want to deal with randomness. We don't want to think about it. So many CEOs that I have worked with, particularly entrepreneurs, they want to believe the reason they're successful is because they're so good. And the VCs want to lend money to the successful CEOs because they're so good. When and often it wasn't that they were good, they were just lucky. They were at the right place at the right time. And can they repeat their success? I haven't seen that many CEOs repeat success. For every Steve Jobs that does repeat success, there are hundreds that don't.
An example and a comment. You know Rio Hamill?
Yeah.
So a recruiter calling me that he takes his son to Battleship Cove. He's up on the top, smoking a cigarette, and he's pissed, screaming to himself, damn it, you know, I got a client, I need to have an HR professional who has a mechanical engineering degree because they want him to also be a facilities manager. How the hell am I going to find that? And he's up there steaming, and the guy next to him lights up a cigarette, and he decides that he's going to blow off his steam. So he turns to the guy and says, can you believe it? They want an HR professional, a mechanic, and the guy looks at him and says, I have those degrees, and I'm out of work. Now, there's also a joke about going to heaven and God and saying to God, why didn't you let me win the lottery? And God turns to the guy and says, well, if you bought it, take it. So the idea is, if you don't turn to people next to you, if you hold it in that you're unemployed and think it's a badge of shame as opposed to an opportunity to talk to random people and say what you'd like to do, you may find out the guy next to you is looking for you. And so it's not that random. If it's a million to one shot, and you never do it, you're not going to win. If you do it 10 times, now it's only 100,000 to one shot.
Right.
And so it's, you know, to your point, a great point. Make your own luck.
And the issue, I mean, I guess one of the reasons that our business model is we're specialists in leadership change when the stakes are high, is I can no longer predict what product is going to sell. And so I need the flexibility to be able to adapt as circumstances change. So the idea of leadership change when the stakes are high is specific enough that people kind of understand the general thing of what we're trying to do. We're not trying to be, you know, general HR people, just this area. But it gives us flexibility, and we all need that flexibility. I'll say one more thing, and then I'm going to shut up about age, because I heard that as a subcurrent, and some of you have heard about what I've said about this before, and we age is one of those issues that if you don't discuss it, there's 100% probability that the interviewer won't bring it up. And age is a multidimensional issue. Sometimes age means exactly what that means, age. They just don't want you because you're too old. For example, Reebok has been a client of mine, but Reebok would never hire me. Number one is I'm too old and I'm too fat. I don't fit the image that Reebok wants to present to the world. I understand that. For them, it's about age and weight. That's okay. But sometimes there's another issue, and that age is the symbol of something else. And that something else has to be addressed. For example, high correlation between age and difficulty on learning. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought learning was tough. Now, at my age, I realize learning's easy. You know what's hard? Unlearning. Because some of the things that may help me be successful are now coming back to haunt me. And a lot of the things I've learned have become habits. And habits are hard to die at my age. And so when someone's going to be interviewing me, they're going to be asking, they're going to be thinking. This is the problem. They're going to be thinking, can he unlearn everything and do it our way? But will the interviewer say that? No. He won't say it because if it's correlated with age. If it's correlated with age, it raises the probability or a chance of age discrimination. I'm not going to go there, thank you very much. So why don't we keep this a polite, nice conversation? I'll think about it, but I won't bring it to your attention. You can't win that way. So what we recommend to our clients is the following. If I were sitting where you're sitting, looking at a guy like me, here's what I need to say. Guy Larry Stivell's age, man, he can't unlearn all, 30 years of worth of work and do it our way. Which gives Stephen the opportunity to say, I would never think such a thing, but since you brought it up, what's your answer? And now I can deal with it. The other issue with age that's correlated with age is energy. I would like to tell you that I am as energetic at my age today as I was 31 years ago, and you know I'd be lying. It isn't true. So we are a high energy company. We have a lot of stress. We work very hard. Can you keep up? But of course, if I ask you that, it's insulting. It's boorish. It's gonna color the conversation. It's gonna be you're gonna think it's an age issue. I don't want to go there. So why don't we keep the interview light and bright, and I'll keep my thoughts to myself. You can't win. Can't win. So therefore, you should be saying to me, if I were sitting where you're sitting, looking at a guy like me, I'd be saying, does he have the energy to keep up with us? I'd never think that, but since you brought it up, I mentioned this afternoon, I had a client once who had a real problem. He had club feet, and he had special shoes that made him look like Clark. Remember Clarabelle the Clown from Howdy Doody? He had these shoes, and you just couldn't help but notice these shoes. And of course, he never got any jobs. And of course, no interviewer would ever ask him about the shoes. So we taught him to say, if I were sitting where you're sitting, looking at a guy like me, looking at these shoes, I'd say, what is that about, and can he keep up with us? Oh, I wasn't thinking that, but since you brought it up, well, I've got club feet, and here's what it means. I can't be on the company basketball team. But there's nothing else in this job that I can't do. He got the job. It had to be brought into the open, and interviewers will not be the ones to do it. You have to take the responsibility. All right, it's time for me to shut up. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Initiative that FEI is launching, and that is a mentoring program for transition FEI or non-FEI career services attendees. And the concept is to facilitate matching your needs with people that can help you throughout the FEI organization. So not just the people that are in this room, but others that are volunteering their time to meet with you and help you in the search. And so it's about matching your interest in an industry or interest in a company or interest in a particular problem that you might be facing with those who've been there before and can perhaps lend a hand in helping you through that process. So you will see a note come out through the FEI organization that will make this more official. But since we have you here tonight, and since Mike Simmons, who is the person who is going to be the clearinghouse, receiving the requests from people in need, and then through a mechanism that we're devising internally, connecting those people with people that are willing and able in that to satisfy that particular need, I thought that it would be a good idea to introduce him to you. You can find his address on the list that I've given you of the FEI Career Services Committee members, and his email is on that list. So please feel free to contact him. And here's Mike.
My wife would be shocked to hear that I'm a clearinghouse for anything. Well, maybe some things, but we've got a bunch of, we have a bunch of people in FEI who've actually volunteered to make a time commitment for meeting with people, and we're going to try and get, try and do some matchmaking here. You know, the right person for you to talk to is this person, and maybe somebody else, the right person is somebody else. But we have, this is a very incredibly collegial volunteer organization, and a lot of people have, that we've approached about this, it's, we've said, will you make a commitment? And, you know, obviously we're not going to send, you know, 10 people to one person every week. So we've gotten a box put around that. And we're getting some guidance from our speaker on this as well. He's actively involved, and after listening to him this evening, I think you can see why we're so grateful to get his counsel. There is nobody better. So that's really the program, and we're kind of getting ready to launch it. We're trying to move it along fairly quickly. So if you have a need, get to this guy, and this guy will try and route it to me, and we'll see if we can get this more active. And particularly with some of the things that I heard Larry saying about how to make this kind of networking, and really in this case, sort of a match made, we may get it wrong, but a match made connection, and maybe this will make all of our searches and relationships more productive.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, I'm sending you an email right now. what I just did.
Hi, Larry. Sure. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Here's my business card.
Okay, great.
And you don't know me in this context, but I'm from FEI in Rochester, and I say Daryl Canfield, you'll say, I know you.
Hello.
Fine.
I know.
I've got a card for you.
Ah, thank you. I'm just emailing this guy to...
So what brings you from Rochester?
I was trying to take a company public, and yeah. The business model changed, and the investment banker said, this isn't going to go under the current